You're listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, your home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
This is episode 28 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. I am your host, Dion Morales, and I am joined by our targeting coordinator, Andrea Longhi.
Hey, guys.
And our historian and flavor judge, Alex Merring.
Hey, you.
Ron is lost in hyperspace. He should hopefully be joining us later. And Marcel is still on vacation. Our plan for today is to go over the Auzatuk gunship preview. Give us your we're going to give you our thoughts, do a little analysis, and see kind of what the ship might do to the meta future. We're also going to be taking listener questions. We got a huge response from our listeners and our patrons, so we can't do them all today. We're going to do about five of them because there are some pretty deep topics in there that we're going to flesh out. But before that, we're going to do our June raffle for our patrons. And for our June raffle, if you didn't see it on Facebook, we are giving away a Sea Rock Cruiser.
Sweet.
Yeah, that's a
It's a good prize.
A retail value of, I don't know, however much it is. We thought it would be a really cool way just to continue saying thank you to our patrons. We are constantly trying to improve the podcast, and we just, I love doing this, and giving stuff away is just fun. So the winner is, who is it, Andrea?
It is Frederick Burdine, however you pronounce it. I apologize for messing it up, but you are our winner. Woohoo!
Unlock the hologram.
All right, guys. So the first thing we're going to do today is we're going to flesh out this Auzatuk gunship preview. They spoiled for us all the upgrade cards that are going to be in there and most of the pilots minus one, but I think with a little bit of intuition and mathing, we could figure out everything that's in this pack here. So I figured we would go over the upgrades first. So the ones that we know already that have been in packs from before, we have Tactician, Intimidation, and Hull upgrade. And somebody who's newer to the game, maybe hasn't gotten a Tactician yet, or maybe you haven't got one from the play kit that is out currently. Intimidation came out, I don't know when that one came out.
No idea.
Phantom. There you go. And Hull upgrade's been out, I think, since the beginning of the game. So, Alex, what's our first upgrade card that's going to be in the pack that's new?
So, we have Wookiee Commandos. And they are a double crew slot upgrade. So, they're going to take up two crews. Rebel only, 1 point. When attacking, you may reroll all of your focus results.
So, first thing I did when I saw Wookiee Commandos is I did a little math on it. So, you probably have heard that on three dice with no modifications at all, you on average yield 1.5 hits. Okay, that's absolutely no focus, no target lock. You're just throwing dice. On average, 1.5 hits. Now, exactly. So now, if you just had target lock, your average hits go up to 2.25. Okay, but here's the thing: the Auzatuk gunship doesn't have the target lock action. Exactly. So what happens is Wookiee Commandos, the math on this is that it yields on average with your initial dice roll and your re-roll of focus, it yields 1.85 hits. And how do we figure out this number? Well, this is right in the middle between the first two numbers I gave you, because the thing is that you can't modify blank dice. So the math is taking into account the two sides of the dice that might possibly come up that you can't do anything about. So it gives you that little, you get a little bit closer to two hits with Wookiee Commandos. But there will be times if you take this card on a ship where you roll this dice and you get like hit and two blanks and the card does nothing. But I think it's appropriately priced at just 1 point.
I don't know how much we're going to see this because it is the double crew. It might end up just being one of those things you slot in just because you have two crew slots available and you just need like one or two more points to fill out a list. But I don't know that this is going to be part of any kind of a competitive meta list.
So, Alex, what's our next new card?
All right. This is Breach Specialist. It's a one crew slot, 1 point. when you are dealt a face-up damage card, you may spend one reinforce token to flip it face down without resolving its effect. If you do until the end of the round, when you are dealt a face-up damage card, flip it face down without resolving its effect.
Really great potential for use in Epic, because all of the Epic ships have the reinforce action. Mm-hmm. And those crits in Epic are horrible on the Epic ships. Like, they're really bad.
And for one crew slot, it seems really good.
And only 1 point, too.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Which in Epic, when you got, 300, 400 points, if you're playing Team Epic, it's nothing.
Yeah.
That now, 1 point is nothing.
Dion, for some of our listeners who are like myself and have either played Epic only once or never, yep, what is reinforce?
So, great question. So, reinforce is actually a really good action. So, what happens is, it's like your mega evade token. So, if you have 8 TIE fighters shooting your 1 Auzituck gunship, and you reinforce the front, and they're all shooting, they can only target the front of your ship, every time you roll defense dice, you add an evade result. So whatever you get on the dice, plus an evade for every single time you are shot. So we're going to get down to this later, but against 2 dice primary weapons, Auzituck gunships are really good. Mind you, we don't see them too much in the meta, but it definitely is going to have a little bit of a push-out effect on TIE fighters and A-wings, because and Z-95s, because they're not going to be able to do any damage if you reinforce, or your chances go down quite a bit. And with the Wookiee gunship, is you can reinforce the front or the back. So the how do you know you can get the front or the back? Well, there's a dividing line. The ship has a 180 firing arc, and
let's not gloss over the 180 firing arc.
Yeah,
that's relevant.
Whatever. Well, I wasn't ready to get there yet. So.
That's fair enough.
That's what I'm glossing over.
We'll talk about it more in a second once we finish all the upgrade cards.
But yeah, so reinforce, really good action.
I like the artwork on that Breach Specialist card. It looks cool.
Yeah, you got the droid like.
Yeah, at first I thought he was like being like R2 and like having a fireball come out of him, but I think he's actually putting out the fireball.
Yeah. When did R2 have a fireball coming out of him?
In Revenge, when he destroyed the droids, when they were rescuing Palpatine.
Yeah, because he had jets. I thought you meant like he literally did like a Hadouken and had a fireball come out of him.
No, he just made a fireball because he's awesome and he's R2.
Excellent.
What special edition did I miss?
So, Jesus. Okay. And the other thing about Breach Specialist is that it's not faction restricted. So any future ships that get a reinforce action will be able to use Breach Specialist. And another thought that I have with this, because I know people are going to ask this question because it happens with Chewbacca crew. If you were playing against somebody who has Boba Fett and I have Breach Specialist and you use this card, the Boba Fett ability still happens because the face-up card is dealt. So, don't be that person. Be the smart person. The card is still dealt. Because what happens is Breach Specialist effect happens after the card is dealt, and Boba Fett happens when it is dealt. So, it's a order of operations there. And the last upgrade card that's going to be new in this pack is Selflessness. It is a unique EPT, small ship only, rebel only. When a friendly ship at range 1 is hit by an attack, you may discard this card to suffer all uncancelled hit results instead of the target ship. And it costs 1 point.
Super thematic. Like, I just love that it's very Wookiee life debt E.
I'll save you.
Right?
Yep. And, you know, in the game, this 1 point card does something really significant. We talk constantly about having to have target priority, right? And then once you know what you want it to shoot down, you focus fire on it. You don't want to be spreading your fire around. You don't want to spread damage around because you want to take ships off the board. This single card for 1 point forces your opponent to spread their damage around to another ship. And especially if you're a high hit point ship, you just brush it off and keep going. We'll talk about how this can be used in some builds later, but selflessness, I think we're going to see a lot of it in competitive play.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how people kind of build around that. Because it's Rebel only, small ship only, there are going to be some limitations, obviously. But because I like that it's an EPT, because that just really, it makes you choose what way you're going with your list building.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, I think it kind of had to be an EPT because of Miranda.
Fair enough.
Right? Because that'd be stupid.
Yeah.
Mind you, if you have like R2-D2 crew or something like that on somebody else, you could still do it. But yeah, selflessness on something that only has 5 or 6 hit points like an X-Wing, that might be bad news.
So let's I'll be excited for it. See how it works.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to have a competition in the store for who has the best Wookiee roar when they use that card.
Me. So let's keep going here. So let's look at the pilots that were revealed. Andrea, you want to go ahead and run those down?
Yeah. So at PS1, we have the Kashyyyk Defender. It has 3 attack dice, 1 agility die, 6 hull, and 3 shields. It's got that double crew slot, so it can use the Wookiee Commandos. And it costs 24 points. Its actions are the focus and reinforce actions. At PS5, we have Lorik. Same stats across the board, except he adds an EPT slot. And his ability, when another friendly ship at range 1 is defending, you may spend 1 reinforced token. If you do, the defender adds 1 evade result. So he's basically using his reinforce on other ships, which is super cool. And he's 28 points. And then the last one, which I am going to have a really hard time pronouncing, Wolfwaro, whatever. same stats as Lorik. And his ability, when attacking, if you have no shields and at least 1 damage card assigned to you, roll 1 additional attack die, and he's at 30 points.
Now, I'm going to throw in my 2 cents here about the PS3. If you look at the ships, like for instance, from Lorik to Wolfwaro, they're 2 points apart. I think your PS3 is probably going to be one of these gunships with an EPT, and the math says it's just another 2 points, so that you end up having 24, 26, 28, and 30.
Yeah, and I would think the PS3 isn't going to have any kind of an ability, but it will have the EPT slot.
No, it'll be generic for sure. So that'll be your, you know, generic with an EPT for 26 points. Not bad. So let's break down some of these abilities here. So Lorik, right, has this ability to spend that reinforced token and add evades on other people's defense dice. Immediately, and I think everybody who saw this thought, holy crap, Biggs. Right? Because
yeah, fair enough.
If you can make Biggs live longer, you're winning the game.
Yeah.
Right? Now, I built a little kind of example list on how this something like this could work. So I took Lorik and put only 1 point on him, and that was for selflessness. You could throw Chopper Crew in there for 0 points. So he's just sitting there at 29 points, and his job is to help keep the next pilot, Biggs, alive. Biggs with R2-D2. Okay, to be able to regen some shields with integrated astromech, and then a missile and torpedo Miranda with like an auto blaster, plasma, concussion missiles, ray, guidance chips. And so when I was first looking at these, at combining Biggs and Lorik together, one of the issues was, all right, now we need to get offense in the list, because if Lorik is reinforcing every single turn in order to help out Biggs, how are we going to get offense? So a missile Miranda being able to throw 5 dice missiles, seemed like a good idea. You end up with 42 points if you use that Biggs and that Lorik build out. 42 points to put something that can do damage in the list. Now, why R2-D2? That's basically, if you do a green maneuver the next turn, that cancels out a damage from before. Selflessness is in there to take away that really big attack that you can't avoid. But if you have something like two hits coming in, even three, maybe even four, with a decent roll, you'll be fine. And that is where the variance in that dice is where some people, I think, are going to have some issues with Lorik with a negative play experience. Some people are a little bit worried about the ship. What do you guys think about that?
I mean, I agree that it can potentially... It has the potential to be a little abusive on that, particular with the selflessness and Biggs. I mean, that just seems like a really nasty combination. But on the flip side, you're right. Those two ships together are tanky as all heck, but they don't really put out damage.
Yeah, and that wouldn't be their job. Their job would be to protect Miranda. You know, you can get...
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah. Alex and I, before we started recording, we jumped on Vassal here, and we were just kind of like, okay, in a joust, after that initial joust, once you get past, so let's say something like a defender, that's what we did. We did one of these versus a defender. The biggest issue that this ship's going to have is, like, it has a decent dial, which we can talk about it. Some people might say it's a really good dial, but it doesn't have any K-turns.
Right.
The 180-degree firing arc helps, but it's going to have the same issue that, what'd you say, Alex, that
the YV.
Yeah, that the party bus has.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you get behind this thing, it can't turn around.
Yeah.
So as long as you have the angle, you're fine. So if it's all about, if I'm playing these, I'm probably going to castle or something like that. Castle and or just really slow play, because you want to keep, if you're flying one of these Azatuk gunships, you're going to want to keep your opponents in front of you as long as possible, because afterwards, if you don't have a clear path to turn around, you're going to be in bad. You're going to be in a bad spot.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And I think that right there is what's going to balance the ship is, if somebody figures out how to fly it really well, it could be definitely an issue. But if you play sloppy with it, if you let people get behind you and you don't have a plan to get turned around, your shenanigans won't matter.
I agree.
So actually, let's before I break down Wolf Waro, let's look at that dial. What's on that dial, Alex?
All right. So starting from the one speed, we have all the ones are green. We have a one banks and a one straight. And at the two speed, we have they're all white except for the straight. We have a two turn, two banks, and a two straight. Three speed, everything is white except the straight again. So three turn, three bank, four straight white, and a five straight red.
So that five straight red, that's your try to get away and try to hard turn to get a shot the next turn. But if the rocks, so that's one another thing we did in our kind of test is I put a really bad rock formation, and if there's not space to turn, you're gonna be in a bad way.
Yeah, you're not going to want to take this into the middle of the map at all. Mm-mm. That would be very bad.
So looking at that PS7 and its ability, I like that it's thematic, right? You got your Wookiee rage. It's like, oh, I'm hurt. Now I'm really mad. I'm going to murder you. Rip off your arms. And I think late game, he can be really dangerous. That extra dice when you're coming down one ship on one ship, you know, if just pushing through that one extra bit of damage can make a big deal. Possible build that we could see with his ability, something like if you're just going for straight offense, right? You can go like Predator, Ray, Chopper, and you're using Chopper to just pop off, do the damage until you don't need it anymore, or you can use the ability, excuse me. Or if you want to just go super cheap, you can go Wookiee Commandos and Crackshot. I think, though, the weaknesses with his ability is, like, without bigs, he still is only one agility plus reinforce. So, effectively, let's say, like, somebody I'm sure will do the math on it. It's maybe count. Maybe it's something equal to like 3 agility with the reinforce. You'll be able to burn it down pretty fast if you just focus fire it. And this type of offensive abilities, I think, is going to draw quite a bit of aggro. But I think most important is anybody who plays him is don't chase his ability. Like purposely hurting yourself to get the fourth dice and then like, okay, now I'm ready for battle. I think that's the wrong way to go.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'm a little, like, I agree with you. I think it's thematic that it's this whole Wookiee rage concept. I don't know. We're all kind of in the same camp of we don't really like abilities that trigger because you're taking damage.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know that I would say the only exception currently to the rule is maybe quick draw. But that's because he gets a whole nother attack.
Right.
Like that's a different story.
Like that,
right.
Yeah,
that's worth it for sure. But just kind of triggering one extra dice in order to take and you having to take damage. I'm not a huge fan, but I'm sure somebody, if you pair him with bigs, something like that, he might have some potential. If you can kind of like do like not necessarily flying them in formation, but starting them separate outside the fight, okay to take some damage, and then once he hits that fourth dice threshold, bringing him together with the bigs and then start pounding the way at things.
Yeah.
But I know people prefer to fly in formation. That's why I'm not sure we're going to see too much of that.
Yeah. Well, and something to consider as well with these guys. Even with the reinforce action, like, you're going to have to fly these guys a little bit smarter because you have to choose fore or aft when you're doing that reinforce action. So yep. You'll always get that additional evade result. But the difference is with the fore side, you're adding an evade result for every defensive role when you're the person that's attacking you is in your firing arc, as opposed to the aft is when someone's attacking you and they're not in your firing arc. So if people are kind of creating this kill box situation around you where they're coming at you from multiple angles, you're not going to be able to use that reinforce as effectively.
Absolutely. Now, this might be a little bit early to jump to this, but we got a listener question from one of our very own Gold Squadron guys, Nathan Oglesby. And he linked me this this forum post asking, basically, is the Auzatuk too good? So, Kinetic Operator, I don't know if you guys have heard of him. He's a really good X-Wing player, well known for putting together that triple K-Wing list a couple years ago with the tacticians and just double-stressing the hell out of everybody. He posted and basically thinking that the ship is too good. So specifically the build that he's worried about is any of the guys that are going to have EPTs with some type of offensive EPT, R2-D2 crew, and C-3PO. So being able to get to that sweet spot where you don't have any shields and you can just, you know, have the reinforce, get that C-3PO evade, you know, 2 evades guaranteed every single time, and being able to ditch those damage cards with R2-D2 crew. What do you guys think, Ron?
Personally, without testing anything, I don't want to jump to any conclusions. I can see where there is a little bit of worry. Anytime you can stack something defensively, there's something to worry about. There are ways to negate some of those abilities where all that would run through. But it's also a lot of points. What are you talking? 8, 10, 11 points worth of upgrades, depending on what you choose for your EPT, right?
Yeah, if you take Lorik, it comes out to 38 points with Predator and those crew.
Yeah, it's a lot of points for a ship that's not going to do that much damage. If you're reinforcing every turn, you're not focusing. I don't know. It seems like just a lot of points.
Now, you know what? Just go all in. Just go all in. Take expertise. Just do it.
39 points.
So 39 points with expertise. Okay. Sure. I mean, I'm not too worried about it, to be honest with you. The ship, you're still going to have to fly the ship because of the arc. It's not like when those two upgrades were an awesome combo, like when C-3PO and R2-D2 crew were an amazing combo. They were on the Falcon. The Falcon had more hull points, a better dial, the ability to use engine upgrade to get out of arc, and the Falcon also had the ability to shoot 360. So it was just like, run away, shoot, modify your free attack with Predator, and then benefit from all these abilities. I don't see this ship getting all those benefits. But, I don't know. Maybe he's tested. I haven't tested, so it's hard to say. You also when those crew members were doing their thing back in Wave 4, TLT wasn't a consistent force of damage like it is now. So you can always just TLT this thing to death, right? Like,
yeah.
How good is reinforced when you're getting hit by a twin turbo laser every turn? It really is not so good. Same thing with C-3PO. So we'll see.
Yeah, we will definitely have to see there. Well, especially if they're out of arc and you're not getting to use that reinforce. Because if you're doing the C-3... Is C-3PO once per round? It's once per round, right?
Yep. Once per round.
Okay, there you go.
It's once per round. And again, like, if you TLT, you're going to get two... probably on average two every time. With your modifiers and whatnot. You got to reinforce. That takes an action. You'll have to trigger C-3PO. But then you won't have C-3PO for the second attack. So, yeah, I don't think it's a problem considering how many points you would have to invest in it.
And the point we were making earlier is these guys don't seem to punch out a lot of damage.
They don't. And if you're spending your thing for reinforce every turn, yeah, Predator will help. You'll go to, you know, getting 75%, you know, die rolls in theory with Predator, but if you load this thing up, what are you going to run with it? You can't run like something super awesome like a loaded out Miranda with it. I think this ship is best when it's running with at least two other ships. So I don't see how you can do that if this thing's at 40 plus points.
So what I did is I took that concerning build and I made a build being able to, so I took Lorik with Predator, R2-D2, C-3PO crew. Then I took Biggs with R4-D6 and then Wolf-Waro, the PS7 one, with Selflessness, Jan Ors, and Jyn Erso. So, okay. So just kind of like, let's just do the super stupid defensive stack. So I'm taking a focus with Biggs, and then I'm doing Jyn Erso to give Biggs more focuses and changing one of them to an evade, and then using Lorik's ability to add another evade to one of Biggs's defenses. So that it can get kind of stupid, but we're coming back to the same issue, is that this list is not going to do very much damage. The damage output.
I mean, what happens when you play that list and your opponent's playing a ghost with a proton torpedo on it and they just target lock Lorik or even a plasma torpedo? First turn, knock all the shields off. Second turn, hit it with another torpedo. The Biggs doesn't do anything, and you've got all these gimmicks that you've put into a ship.
Yep, and that's right there on the bottom there on our notes. You see weaknesses. The most obvious counter to these reinforced shenanigans is target lock ordnance. When you're trying to combine it with Biggs, you're like, oh, I'm just going to target like this guy and blow him up. One thing that people are currently worried about right now is like triple U-boats, right? So while they might not be able to do on that initial attack, being able to like spend the focus, get a target lock, and then shoot the torpedo, they'll just wait for the second turn because you're not doing that much damage, get the target lock the second turn, and then shoot the torpedoes.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, and ordnance is definitely a thing. Ordnance, secondary weapons, TLT, those are always going to be a thing. So, and if you're not doing any damage, I mean, what does this list do against, like, triple defenders where they've got three agility dice, evade tokens, focus tokens? Like, you might not just be able to do any damage and just get out defended.
Yep, and that's actually right before Ron, you didn't hear us talk about this. Welcome back, Ron, by the way.
Thanks.
We told everybody you were lost in hyperspace. I'm glad you made it back to us.
I was
navigating the maw.
I accidentally went plaid and overshot my house, so I had to come back.
Alex and I, before we started recording, we just did just a quick joust. He had triple defenders. I took this list, and while we did, you know, we did maybe a couple shields of damage onto Biggs. We had the potential to make it none, but being conservative and spending the tokens, I did zero damage to the defenders, nothing. And even on a second turn of jousting, nothing, no damage. And that's going to be the issue, is that while you might be able to live for a long time, like you said it perfect, I think, you might get out defended.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I checked, like, the Empire is still running pretty tanky three agility ships, you know, defenders, special forces, TIE fighters, TIE foes. I mean, it's still a thing.
Yep. And then on top of this is these ships with this reinforce, they're going to be relying heavily on actions. So if you can action deny them with blocking or stress or making them hit asteroids, all these kind of things, tractor beaming them onto an asteroid or something like that, then they can't use the reinforce, which is the biggest thing people are worried about.
Well, that's the thing, like, right? These things are super susceptible to tractor beam. Like, if you throw C-3PO on it and you tractor beam it, then it has zero agility, can't trigger C-3PO either.
Yep.
So, I don't know. I feel like this seems to be enough safeguards in the game currently that I think this, we got to be careful when people talk about things being overpowered, because in reality not everything in the game is overpowered, right? Like,
exactly,
something's got to be tier one, something's got to be good. Like, it's very few things that are just OP, in my opinion.
Agreed. And I think that this ship is going to be good. I think it's going to be a good ship, but I don't think it's anything to freak out about.
It seems like it's a good tournament option is what it seems like for the Rebels, and I'm excited to see that. I would like to see a tournament list for the Rebels that doesn't revolve around Miranda or the Ghost.
I find that answer vague and unconvincing.
Alright guys, so we're doing a new segment today. I put a shout out on our Facebook and our Patreon page saying, hey, do you guys have questions for us? Like, I'm not sure if that's a thing people wanted to do. And we got a ton of questions. And depending on time, I don't even know if we'll get to the five that we have here. We're going to do our best to get through them. And what I'd like to do is every show answer a couple of them and get through these questions. And when we run out, we'll ask for some more. So first question from Luke Baker. Do turrets and primary weapon turrets need a change, or are turrets completely fine as is?
I don't. I think it's too late to try and change them at this point. Should turrets maybe have been a little bit more like the Shadowcaster, where you actually have to take an action to choose which quote unquote arc you're firing out of? I think that makes a little bit more sense. I don't know that you can go back and change it now, though. There's just too much in the game that's happened that way, and that's talking about like X-Wing 2.0 or 3.0 at that point. We're restarting over the whole game and starting from scratch. I don't really know that there's anything you can do about it at this point.
I 100% agree. I feel like if they would have decided to do the Shadowcaster, I think the Shadowcaster mobile firing arc is probably the best way to design a turret for X-Wing, because it forces you to still rely upon a face and think about, like, facing matters at that point still. We've had the turret since wave two, and so much of the game balance, auto thrusters and other abilities have been put in the game because their turrets were a little too powerful. Now you're just trying to rewind the whole game. If you did that, you would have to take out other things, and I think it is what it is. Probably shouldn't change. I could see maybe getting more of the mobile firing arc going forward. Or if you put a ship with a turret on it, maybe increase the cost because you kind of have an idea of what it really should have cost. And maybe the ships that already have turrets, those are just the good ones. I'm not really sure. I really don't think you can change them, though, at this point. I think they are what they are, and we're used to them.
Alex, any thoughts?
Yeah, I'm pretty much in agreement. I think what could have been done, if we wanted to kind of balance things out a little bit, is if we had the mobile firing arc introduced with, like, the Falcon, and then maybe some sort of crew member down the line that lets you move the arc for free at the beginning of the combat phase or something like that, with the appropriate cost. But yeah, I think it is way, way too late in the game to need a change. And I mean, obviously, I think this question is probably premeditated from TLT. But I don't think anything that would change turrets altogether, I mean, the rest of the turrets shouldn't be hit because of TLT. But yeah, like everybody said, it's way too late to make a blanket change now.
And with primary weapon turrets, my understanding is when we spoke to Frank and Alex at 2016 Worlds, is when they decide kind of how ships work, they try to go from a thematic standpoint. It's like, all right, what crew, how many crew slots does it get? You know, well, it has X number of seats, and this is why they try to justify each of the mechanics with what is in the ship. So something with a Falcon, there, at least the original thought was, the reason it wasn't designed like the mobile firing arc is that there's a completely different person that's not the pilot moving that gun and shooting it, totally independent from the pilot. So that, at least thematically, was the reason why, or is one of the reasons why turrets operate manually, is because there's a separate person who's not the pilot doing it. And at least with the Shadowcaster, I don't know if you've seen in Rebels, that's one pilot making the gun spin. I think one thing we can all agree on is that TLT is undercosted, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So we'll go on to Scott Morgan's question. He says, he has a pretty long question here, so bear with me here. So he says, how do you think local venues might be able to change up event structures to promote a more diverse field of lists and counter meta stagnation, like we're currently seeing? What suggestions might you give the clubs/stores to mix things up and help alleviate some of the issues between FAQs and releases?
The one thing I will say before we talk about this at all, if you're running a sanctioned store championship or regional, there's nothing you can do because you have to run the game by the game rules. So it just is what it is. There's really nothing you can do. As far as if you're just looking to run a tournament at your store that isn't one of those FFG sanctioned events, I like running things like achievements. We do that for League, where we'll come up with lists of bonus things or in-game achievements of X-Wing that rewards people for flying ships that are maybe underflown, flying upgrade cards that people don't use, do crazy things like roll 9 dice in a single attack, like Mr. Darwin. Or last week, one of our achievements was to fly ships with no upgrades. And I don't know if you guys heard, but Al flew a naked Rear Admiral Chirinow and a naked Oiken and beat Brandon with his T-65 lists.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet. Brandon was kind of mad, but I was like, man, you win everything, and Al beats you one time. But yeah, so, I mean, achievements, I think, are a great way to go about it. I think you know, just having fun with the rules in such that people play different ships. I've been to tournaments where they have, like, only X amount of waves are allowed to be used. I don't always think that's the greatest. I prefer, there's this thing I want to try with our store. I'd like to try the every upgrade's unique, and you can't have more than two upgrades on a single ship. I'd like to try that format. There's always the draft format that we run, which I think is probably one of the best alternative formats. We have all the rules posted online if you want. I'm sure DM wouldn't mind posting the rules to the podcast page.
Of course.
What did you guys think of the draft? I think the draft's probably one of the best ways, because not only do you get to play a different type of X-Wing, but you also are getting rewarded for your skill in building a list.
Or you could be like Dion and just be a hooser and draft Manaroo.
Listen.
Yeah, you could be like Dion and fly the same ship that he's been flying for 2 years.
That's your opportunity to pick something else, dude. What the
Listen. Hate me, okay? I won the event. Hate me.
I know. Because you drafted Manaroo.
Whatever.
Yeah, Manaroo's dead, though. She got nerfed.
To be fair, I also rolled like a Class A Royal Donkey against him and very, very much helped him out.
Well, you know what? Roll better. Go home and practice you rolling your dice, okay?
Yeah, I basically shouldn't have even played Howl Runner in our game, because I don't think a single reroll turned into
there was
damage.
All blank to blanks. It was
bad.
It was bad. All right. And
at the end of the game, I was just like, I hope I kill Manaroo, just to kill Manaroo.
Yep. Yeah. So like,
and that didn't even happen.
At that event, I flew Major Striden. Because it was with the draft, we allow mixed factions. I had Major Striden, Manaroo, and a Lothal Rebel. So it was three chunky big bays. It was awesome. And here's another thought to go back to Scott's question is, I would love to see, now we dropped today, today being June 12th. We released I did an interview with Phil Mead from the Shuttle Tidarium podcast. They put together this really awesome, I'm going to show it to you, Ron, this really awesome event format that you can run in a tournament structure, but it has objective based, and your top table ends up being affected by how the other matches do, depending on the factions and stuff like that.
I think that's cool.
Yeah, really cool.
I'm totally down with that kind of stuff. Like, you know, and once Swords Championship season is over, I want to start doing more of that stuff for our monthly events and stuff.
Yeah. And I think I would love to see, because I know for Armada, the Corellian Conflict came out. I would love to see FFG come out with some type of, pre-made box set that I can just, you know, buy and put on the table and be able to play some type of thematic or achievement-based game from it using my X-Wing pieces. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah, I really think the idea of adding objectives to Armada and Imperial Assault really add a lot of flavor to games, and it also, like, encourages, like, fighting and not running away because you might be losing on objective points. I think that's something that can totally translate to X-Wing, and I think, like you're saying, if FFG ever made a boxed expansion, maybe it was an expansion that they offered some cards for fixes for other ships, but in addition to that, you got these other cards for, like, fun, objective-based campaign games.
Mm-hmm. And I think the answers we just gave, I think, pretty much answer Luke Cohen's question. He asked, do you think FFG should change up the base game format? And do I think FFG should change it? Well, no. It's currently the way it stands right now. I think it works. It's great. This is the competitive format. But adding things to it, I think, would be fine. Something that you can do on the casual side events. I think even, let's say, FFG came out with an official tournament way to do something with objectives, having one of their major tournaments revolve around something like that. That could be cool. But my understanding from the developers, the 100 point dogfight is your main X-Wing. Like, that will always be the way it goes, at least until something changes. Next question is from Eric Zhang, friend of the show, and his question is, how are you guys enjoying the whole podcasting thing? Have...
No, you had it right.
Okay, no, yeah. How do you feel like you've evolved in the past year? How has Patreon changed the way you produce your podcast? And what advice do you have for newer podcasts starting out?
So that's a lot of questions.
That is a lot. That's a lot. I'll let you guys start because I know that a lot of it has to do directly with what I do for the show. So I'll let you guys kind of go first.
Yeah. So I guess we'll kind of take this in pieces. Like, how are you enjoying the whole podcasting thing? I think it's a lot of fun. I mean, my favorite part is actually going to events like Celebration or Worlds or Gen Con and getting to meet people that are fans of the show and getting to talk to them. And I just, that's the best part to me. Obviously, we've evolved pretty significantly since we started a little over a year ago.
Please, God, don't listen to episode one. Don't do
I'm sure it's real bad. Hey, I actually wasn't in it yet, so I can't take the credit for how bad it was. But I think part of it evolved. I think Patreon helped us evolve quicker because we were, at least I felt like we were getting all of this money from people, we had to put out something that was of value. I just felt like the bar was raised by having that push. So I think it really helped us kind of just get our act together and start putting out things that were worthwhile, putting out content that was worthwhile, and talking about things that you guys, the fans, wanted to hear about. But if you're just starting out, have somebody like Dion that just runs it. That's my advice. I do nothing but show up and talk for an hour and a half.
Yeah, personally, I love doing the podcast. I wish I could actually do more with the podcast, and I am making strides to work towards doing more. The podcast is just a really fun way to write, like talk about your favorite game and what you have a passion about. And the fact that other people want to listen and want to have input and share your love for Star Wars and X-Wing is awesome. The whole reason I started the whole Gold Squadron thing and the events at Pastimes was honestly, I needed someone to play Star Wars games with that wasn't my wife because she didn't really play that many games. And I was starting to feel bad that I was like, hey, I want to play this game. No one will play with me. So I went and I found people to play with. As far as how has it evolved, I think it's just gotten bigger. The podcasts have gotten better. We've changed. We've learned what people like. Most of it actually all has to do with Dion and his ability to adapt and kind of understand what the listeners want and put together all the shows. Patreon has been humongous because it allowed Dion to buy all the equipment that we need to do the podcast right, to do the live stream right, to get the prizes that everyone gets. As far as advice with newer podcasts, my biggest thing, honestly, I would say just jump into it. Learn. Do it. Have fun and learn. Don't put it off. Don't be like, well, I have to do this. No, just get in there. You'll find your groove and you can have a good time regardless.
Yeah, so for how I'm enjoying it, I mean, this is one of the most enjoyable things I've done for a long time. I think my most favorite moment was back in Hoth. I pretty much went on tilt very quickly. So toward the middle of the day, I played with one of our listeners, and I'm horrible with names and I also don't take notes, so I don't remember his name. But at the end of the game, he just asked, you know, what advice do you have? And, you know, I just gave him a couple pointers on what he was doing. And I met him a couple rounds later. I just passed him between rounds. He said, hey, you know, I listened to your advice and it totally changed the game for me. And, you know, I really appreciate it. And that's the type of stuff I love hearing, and that's the type of reasons why, you know, I enjoy helping out with this. With the evolving over the past year, I mean, like everybody's pretty much touched on, we've changed how our format is. You know, like Dion said, you know, if you go to episode one to this, it's totally different. I was over the moon when everybody actually said, hey, you know, Into the Archives is pretty cool. So I'm glad that I can contribute with something. Obviously, Dion is the man with the plan. He's wrapping this all together. This is really his love child. So Patreon gives him, you know, the tools he needs to do that. And for newer podcasts, I would say just do your own thing. Like, don't listen to us and go, hey, we need to do a evaluation of these ships, and we need to do, you know, talk about the math and do this, this, and this. And there's no checklist to go off of. Just do your own thing, do it well, and people will enjoy it.
Cool. I love this podcast.
Let's hope you do. You spend lots of time on it.
I do spend lots of time on it. So like I've mentioned before, I'm a teacher by trade, and I absolutely love teaching. It doesn't matter what it is, but being able to share information and see somebody use it and have success with it, I think is probably my favorite thing. One of the biggest kind of stars I have for the podcast, that's just like on our list of people we've helped, you know, Jonathan Proctor, who won the Steel Open, right after, sent us a message and saying, man, your guys' episodes, the How to Practice series on the rock setups, like that won me Steel Open. And that was just a huge honor to get that message and go, oh man, like we made a difference. I'm all about teaching, and whether it is in a tournament game, or a casual night, I'm always making sure that, you know, if I can help somebody out, I'm going to help them out. And on top of that, teaching has made me better. It doesn't matter, what it, anything with X-Wing. I've learned a lot just trying to be able to teach. It's like, all right, I have to learn these things because I want to show people how to do it. And I've become a significantly better player because of it. How we've evolved, I mean, I think everybody here has talked about it. We've changed the format. We're doing extra things here and there. We started the YouTube page. We're doing the streaming. My goal, you know, in the future is just to continue building on top of this Gold Squadron brand, and just being able to make it a, for lack of a better term, a Star Wars gaming media empire, you know, just building it and seeing where we can go, because I don't know how long this ride is going to last, and I'm going to do the best that I can to continue bringing great content for everybody. Patreon has helped us, just like Ron said, buy the equipment. Alex's mic, Marcel's mic, the computer that we're using to record right now, just all this stuff costs money. The camera, and it's money that I don't have for myself. We started out just using the janky recording equipment that I personally owned, and we've come a long way from that. And advice for newer podcasts: don't be afraid to ask questions. You can go ahead and message me. I've had a few people already message me like, hey, I'm thinking about starting a podcast. How does this work? How does that work? I'm an open book. I don't keep secrets, you know, trade secrets or anything like that. Here's a perfect example. Radio TCX. Those guys are great. Great podcast. They messaged me, was maybe like a month ago, and not Carson. Tim Dugan, he mentioned me and say, hey, we're thinking about live streaming. What's your setup? And I built this whole thing. I was like, buy this and you'll have a great setup. And that's what he did. And now they're starting to stream matches and stuff like that, which is great. So don't be afraid to ask questions. And our last question here comes from Joseph Woodroffe. And he says, which underlying concepts of the game are important to truly understanding how to achieve victory? I love the way this question is worded, guys. I love it. Because it's just so deep, right? It's a philosophy question.
I think the two most fundamental basics that every X-Wing player has to get down when they're playing is turn zero, your opening setup, and studying exactly how the ships move. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, knowing how far a hard one turns you versus a hard two or a bank. And there is a phenomenal guide just on the FFG forums with pictures and, like, laser pointers, and they go through and they explain all that. Just to put that stuff in your memory bank to get you started will see a dramatic improvement of your game.
And Joseph, this question is a great question, and it's impossible to touch on everything, but for just to kind of just the next piece that I'm going to put on here is one of the biggest tools that any gamer, anybody who's doing anything can develop is self-evaluation. I see, and we have people in our own squadron, and people that I've helped, that they continually make the same mistakes and then ask, why am I losing and why is this not working? And that is one of the biggest issues, that people start spiraling and saying, well, I guess I'm just bad. Well, you know, if you're making a conscious decision to not follow the things that are going to make you better, then there's nothing you could do about that. But being able to self-evaluate and react from that is a big deal. I'm going to give a good example. There's a lot of people, like, I will jokingly complain about dice, but there are people who legitimately be like, oh man, I had a bad game. My dice just went ice cold. And, like, sometimes, once in a while, sure, it happens. I was at that game with Ron, and he had Howlrunner in the perfect spot. He had focus on all his guys and threw blank blank and re-rolled Howlrunner blank, and that must have happened, like, 10 times. It was ridiculous. Like, that does happen. But, for instance, if you are getting blocked, you're not taking actions, you're bumping into asteroids, and you're expecting your dice to bail you out, and then you complain that you had a bad dice game, that is not good growth. So just being able to really evaluate why things went wrong, and, you know, looking at yourself, the decisions you made, and not, like, the things you had in your control rather than what's out of your control.
You're 100% correct. I totally agree with you. And I think if you want to become a great player, I would take it even one step further. Every time you play a game of X-Wing, win, lose, or draw, you should always sit down, and if it helps, write it down on a piece of paper. Write down what you think you made a mistake, not what you did well. Write down what you think you made a mistake and what you could have done better. Because even the good players, like the really good players, you know, there might be one die roll, right, that if it went your way, it seems like, oh, I would have won with that one die roll. But sometimes there's one decision that would have bigger impacted that game than that one die roll.
Oh, yeah.
But if you don't see the mistake, you can't fix it. And there are certain people, like he said, they're just always going to be mediocre at X-Wing because they can't self-evaluate. They can't take ownership for why they won or lost.
Absolutely. And I think another valuable tool in that is, don't be afraid to discuss a game afterwards. Be like, hey, what do you think I could have done better? And that's even win or lose. You know, I've had people kind of look at me funny after I won a game, be like, man, I should have done this here. Be like, what, would you won the game? It's like, well, yeah, I won, but I could have won better. You know? And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because because you want to, as many things as you have in your control, want to be able to make those as solid as possible, so that when it comes to, let's, something like the dice or your opponent's moves that you can do nothing about, you know, you have to have your stuff down before you have to worry about something else.
I hate to say it, but it looks like the system you're searching for doesn't exist.
Impossible. Perhaps the archives are incomplete.
If an item does not appear in our records, it does not exist.
Hey, Alex, we are back in the library. It's good to be in here, man. It's starting to freshen up. It's getting warmer outside. You can actually see the sun through the windows.
Yeah, so today in the archives, we're going to be talking about one of those new Wookiee pilots, Lohrik.
That was a good one.
That was good. Is he here? Okay, so Lohrik, like the rest of the Wookiees, are from the planet of Kashyyyk. And while he was on Kashyyyk, his sister and nephew were killed by Trandoshan hunting parties who, you know, just like to go hunting for kicks and giggles. So while he was attempting to get revenge, he was actually captured and put into slavery. And he was put in mostly as a gladiator, so he would fight to the death against, you know, other slaves. And eventually he was really good. Obviously he survived and he attracted the attention of a Hutt crime lord named Teemo, who was based out of Tatooine. So Teemo bought Lohrik and he became his absolute favorite gladiator. So he actually had his own droid medic assigned to him. So pretty much any time he would get any injuries, the droid medic would fix him up and he'd go right back out onto it. So they struck up a friendship and they eventually broke out of Teemo's grasp. And from there, it actually, the story can depend on you, because Lohrik is actually a character from the Star Wars LCG Edge of the Empire beginner game. So he is one of the four pre-made characters. That droid medic's another one. So you can play as Lohrik and determine his story for yourself.
Do you live in the Chicagoland area or plan on visiting? Come on down to Pastimes Comics and Games, the home of Gold Squadron, where we play X-Wing every Wednesday and have tournaments the first Sunday of every month. We also play Imperial Assault, Armada, LCG, and Destiny on different days. Visit our Facebook page, Pastimes Star Wars, for more information.
Where are those transmissions you intercepted? What have you done with those plans?
Hey, everybody. This is my favorite part of the show.
Woo!
I didn't want to disappoint.
Yes, it is.
It's my favorite.
We are in the midst of store championship season. So right now, really the only events on the calendar are store championships and our monthly X-Wing events. We do have Gen Con, which is, I think, 6 weeks from today, or 7 weeks. Or maybe it's closer to 2 months. I don't know. It's close. And then we have Nationals. So our store championship is literally the week before Gen Con. We'll probably have 50, 60 players, is my guess. We had 78 last year. I'm not really sure. Because I think there's 15 or 16 store championships in Chicago this year. Does that sound right, Dion?
Yeah, there's quite a few.
There's a ton. So, but if you want to win the largest store championship, you should probably come to Pastimes and join the Gold Squadron crew, because it's a pretty tough field.
Yeah, it is.
And the prizes will be sick, just like always.
If you don't know where your store championships are, contact your local friendly game store. Look at the ones in the area. It's really cool to go and travel to all these tournaments and maybe meet people that you didn't know played X-Wing in your area. It's pretty cool. And as you may or may not know, I am streaming a bunch of store championships. After you've listened to this, I would have streamed and played in a second store championship. I got third at Top Cut Comics, and I'm going to be going to the Wandering Dragon, which you would have seen already, and the one that's upcoming. I mean, there's so many. I've said it before. My wife's amazing. She said, "Go for it, honey. I know that you're doing this for your patrons and everything." And so gonna be there. We're streaming also from the North American Championships, the Gen Con. We're going to the Nova Open. We're not going to be streaming from there. You can catch all of our live streaming at twitch.tv/Gold Squadron Podcast. You can watch our video tutorials and replays of our streams on our YouTube channel. Just look up Gold Squadron Podcast on YouTube. Lastly, if you enjoy the show and want to help us continuing to expand our content and get awesome swag in the process, go to patreon.com/Gold Squadron. For Ron, Andrea, and Alex, and Marcel, who's on vacation in Europe, lucky bastard, this is Dion Morales. Gold Squadron, out.